What's happening, y'all? This is Todd Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today, we have our special guest, man. My light-skinned partner from way, way, way back, man. Harvard alum, basketball player, a former pro. Now, he is a venture capitalist, man. One of my favorite people to talk to because he just lights up a room. Mr. Christian Jusain.
Oh, man. I appreciate you having me, man.
No, absolutely, man. Thanks for coming on the show, man. Out swagging me. Guys, I need help. I need help. Okay, so I just need
some suggestions
of what to wear on the show. We like to start the show off with the Wall of Hoop movies, your favorite hoop movie of all time, and why.
You know what's funny, man? I walked in here and I saw so many. I mean, obviously these are classics, but funny enough, if we're talking about reps, if we're talking about actual views, I'm going with Semi-Pro.
Man.
Classic. I might have been Coffee Black for Halloween one year.
We're going to find that picture.
Yeah.
We got to find that.
Yeah.
Love so that.
That's low-key one of my rogue favorites.
That's your rogue favorite.
Yeah.
But all-time favorite?
It's hard not to say that.
Yeah.
It's hard not to put Jesus in there. But I'm sure everybody has said that. So I got to go.
It is
got to be
one
different
movie.
For the sake of being different.
No, I like it. It is the number one movie that selected that.
Yeah.
Above the Rim. Mm-hmm. And Love and Basketball, actually. Okay. You know, for those hoopers who... Yeah. We have a heart.
Everybody has fallen in love with that movie at some point.
Have you seen every movie that's in here?
Probably. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
You seen Cornbread earlier than me?
Okay, no, I haven't seen Cornbread.
You gotta watch Cornbread.
Yeah.
It's an old school one.
It's a deep cut?
It is. It actually is, man. Okay. Cornbread gets shot at the end of the movie. Yeah, I'm gonna ruin it for
real
you.
Life.
But yeah, then you go see it, though. It's okay. Inner city hoop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Crazy.
Five.
But yeah, man, when did you fall in love with basketball?
Man. It's a crazy, I mean, it's so easy and cliche, I think, to say that you fell in love with it immediately. I would just say that it's similar to love in other aspects of life. It's like a process, and it's something you look up and you're kind of in it. I mean, my parents had me with a ball at Balboa Park around 3 years old. With the league where, you know, they bring the hoop down.
Yeah.
And then they got to put the attachment hoop on it. Mm-hmm. You can't play defense outside the box.
Yep.
So from that on, I mean, that was 3 or 4 years old. And they threw me in a bunch of sports. I played soccer. I played t-ball. I played flag football. And I think basketball was the thing I kept signing up for. So it was clear and evident that this is kind of what I wanted to do. And then slightly and slowly... You start playing in the ARC League, and I'm sure there's a bunch of people watching this who know the ARC League. You start traveling a bit more at local tournaments, and then all of a sudden you kind of blink up, and you're in high school, and you're doing the circuit, and it's just kind of a thing that just kind of happens, I guess.
So ARC was your first, like, step into, like, the real side of basketball. You know, rec league is rec.
Right, rec league is rec. You wake up, and it's 9 a.m. at North Hollywood High School.
Yep.
On a Sunday morning, and you're getting full court diamond trap.
The first thing in the morning
by Max Hazard and Tyler Dorsey.
Man.
And so I remember you get to a point in your career where you're fearless and you're still confident in yourself. At 9 years old, I'm lying to say that I was. And so I remember looking at the schedule, and there were certain teams at the time that instilled fear in you. ARC Nines were one of them. Mm-hmm. If I listed the names off, I'm sure a lot of people would know. It was like Max Hazard, Max Heidegger, Tyler Dorsey. They had some bigs that were insane. I think they might have had, I don't know if they had Parker Cartwright.
Mm.
He might have been a year up. There was just, I mean, the team was
loaded.
Was loaded. And so, you know, anyone throws a diamond trap at you at nine, it's like,
yes. It's intense.
It's serious. So, that was when it got a bit more serious. You know, parents get into it more. My dad was really getting into it. And so, yeah.
And then, so I know the ARC was like the beginning of kind of AAU and playing club style ball. When was that next jump for you before high school, like playing, you know, at the higher level, going traveling? Did you do the Vegas trips?
Right.
You know, all
the
that
Vegas
stuff?
Trips felt like routine, end of July every year. But really started traveling, I think, for the first time was Cal Supreme I think it was like the eighth grade team.
Okay.
So I might have been in seventh grade or something at the time. And that was when we first started like really going. And we had a good team that a lot, I think almost everybody probably went D1. Then it went double pumps. Then it went, I kind of played for everybody, to be honest.
I got around.
Played for the double pumps, which was great. And then I played for Rockfish, which was one of my favorite experiences.
Yeah.
And then ended with Ryan Silvern and them at Earl Watt, at the time, Earl Watson Elite, now West Coast Elite.
Nope, it's All In Elite now. Change the name again. It's All In Elite.
I can't keep up. I've aged out of the whole basketball scene. But
he's always doing his thing. So what's the difference from, you have, like literally you experienced almost every program out here. What was the difference in you highlighted Rockfish and what they do, which a lot of people nationally don't know. Us in LA know what Rockfish is and what it was, what it meant, especially when we were younger.
Right.
But even the way they still develop today.
Man, it was your different type of AAU program. And I mean, I can't really speak to the kids now. It's more like short form content and what you're seeing. It's a lot more game to game. And I think there's a bunch of issues with the system quite generally in terms of it's permeated to the point where you see the best players in the league now, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of them aren't from here, but I just really appreciated what Rockfish did from a development standpoint. We'd be in there for 3 hours on a Saturday and a Sunday, like drilling the game. You were gonna learn how to play basketball.
Yeah.
And so that was probably one of the best summers ever for me in terms of the way we moved it. It felt like we were a Warriors-esque group. We had a bunch of shooters. We had, you know, the Henry Welshes of the world, you know, down at the five. We had like really good fours, and it was just a team. I had Lindsey Drew, who was a year older than me at the time, and obviously everyone knows that lineage and just what they brought to the table. So everyone had something to learn off of from the other guy, and the staff was just incredible. It was a formative experience for me, honestly, in terms of the point guard I ended up being versus like the off-ball, just let's go get buckets guy. So yeah, that was probably one of my biggest growth summers.
No, that's dope. Sure. That's dope. And what grade was that?
That was the summer after my sophomore year.
Oh, wow.
Summer after my sophomore year, yeah.
So, and that's when you went to for high school, so you transitioned to Viewpoint. Were you at Viewpoint all 4 years?
I was at Viewpoint all 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so turn that place up a little bit, man. Put them on the map a little bit.
What a ride, man. What a ride. That was a special group, that serendipitous, like, you got a Ron Marsalani, you got Sheldon Loya, you got a Mie Oni. And we organically grew. And I love telling the story that everyone was like, man, y'all had a good group. And it was like, we always had a good group. We were so young. I mean, I think we might have won like 2 league games my first 2 years.
Right.
Because the Gold Coast League was that good. I mean, if we brought up that list the first
year. That's when Sierra Canyon was still in the Gold Coast League.
That's when Sierra Canyon was in there. I remember my first year, the first team list was like me. It was DeVerl, Ramsey, Derek Thornton, Aaron Holiday, Trey Holder, Leland King, some guy, Charles Dawson, when we're naming Wright, Pac Hills.
Pac Hills was in that league too. That's right.
Oh, and they had my man, I'm forgetting his name right now.
The other guard.
Yeah, he's one of my, I'm tripping. But I mean, deep.
Yeah.
And so it took us figuring that out and not, you know, you got all these kids transferring in these days, and I get it. But a group that stuck through it and saw the results, you know, past hitting your inflection point and, you know, 2 CIF appearances and championship later, like, it was nice to be a part of a journey like that, and just something I cherished for a long time.
Dope. And did you know that Mie was going to be a pro?
Dude, Mie, it was hard to tell because Mie didn't play for 3 years. And so Mie's junior year, he had it. And it was like, oh man, like this is gonna be such
a— What do you mean he didn't play for 3 years?
He was hurt.
Oh,
Mie had been hurt for so long, kind of dealing with injuries and whatnot. And so his junior year, my sophomore year, we were so excited. The full group was together. And he goes down with a freak accident in layup lines, I think at St. Francis. Like right before the season starts and is out for the year. Wow. Now, for better or for worse, I mean, this dude ends up rehabbing the whole year at like Dune City and doing all this work. And he came back senior year a whole different monster. And so you can always look back in retrospect and be like, oh, everything happened for a reason. He came back Euro step dunking on people. He came back. And I think at that point it was like, oh, because even his next round of AAU was like, he had already committed to Yale, but everybody was after
him. Because he was committed to a D3 before that.
Yeah.
And then
exactly
Yale happened. And
so it was, I mean, those practices were scary.
Yeah.
My junior year, senior year, it was like.
Yeah. And we connected through this journey, just making our inflection point was working with Johnny. And then meeting you just from working with Johnny, being at 360 Health Club. Shout out 360. We love you and we miss you.
can't believe it's gone.
Crazy. Crazy, man. They're dumb.
I still remember me, you, and Johnny working on the side court closest to the wall.
Yep.
And getting it in right there.
Yeah, all day, man. That was the good old days. But, just stepping in and working on ball handling. Remember that ball handling workout that one morning? There was this one morning. We got there like at 5 a.m. We did ball handling.
Yes, I actually do.
In 20 minutes.
Man, you were like, not messing around.
I wasn't. I did every ball handling draw I knew.
Yeah.
But yeah, probably didn't work. That was before I knew I was doing all the way. But still no, worked.
It worked because we couldn't handle it back then.
Yeah.
So
and then it worked. Through your growth, like just seeing you from your junior year to your senior year, right? Really focusing in on your shot, working on your athleticism. And your dad was huge on like, Christian just has a dunk in warm-ups. I don't care if he ever dunks in the game. He has a show. He's athletic in warm-ups. And seeing you just work, man. Like the biggest compliment I could ever give your family is like, man, I've never met a family where everybody works that hard. Like y'all are grinders and just lived in the gym. Where did that come from? What from your childhood or from your parents like got you and your siblings to just work like that?
I mean, not to be cliche, but my parents, man, I mean, they don't stop. Like my dad's found a great way to balance it and he's been so present, but I was an entrepreneur who goes 0 to 1 and 1 to 10, like that's all day, every day. And so, you know, my mom working and holding the family down and doing all this, like work ethic was something that was subconsciously in front of me every day. And then the other aspect of that was I didn't have a choice.
Right.
Not only because of my parents, but I wasn't good enough to not work hard. Mm. I didn't have a 40-inch vertical. I didn't have a ridiculous, like, I wasn't shooting from half court. I didn't have Kyrie handle. And so if I wanted to get to where I wanted to, there was no other path or there's no way around it. There's no corner cutting to say. And so I figured out pretty quickly, I mean, you could play or you could not play.
Right.
You know? And, you know, you always have, I'm sure like every kid watching has had those car rides where your parents are like, hey, you want to do this? After a bad weekend on the way home from Anaheim Sports Center. But aside from that, in terms of, you know, you can only go out and test the market, whether it's business or basketball or whatever, and you'll get real feedback. And so going up against some of the guys in LA being in that market per se, like, you know where you're at.
Right.
And there's only one way to kind of change those things. So
I think it's I like that you highlighted you had no special skill physically. What you had was the special skill mentally and with that work ethic, and people don't understand how far that can take you. And I wouldn't say because you were good, but you got better as you got older,
like
that late bloom, like oh he can play you know. Seeing you and what's my guy's name? When you guys play with West Coast League, Earl Watson, the guard, Shaq.
Oh yeah,
crazy backcourt. Two underrated cats.
Yeah,
getting after it, right? Yeah. And seeing you guys, I think you guys did pretty well in the circuit that year. Mm-hmm. That's when Under Armour first started, right?
It was early. But it was a hell of a year that year.
Yeah, it was good stuff, and your opportunities came. And so I want you to talk about that, just being kind of a late bloomer in a sense, yeah, and then your recruiting journey.
Yeah.
And, you know, how you landed on Harvard.
For sure. I guess to give context to those watching, like, I was definitely a late bloomer in the sense of my actual game, in the sense of kids thinking that it's okay to figure it out later. Like, I still had offers as a freshman. Yeah. Like, it wasn't like, you know, I just touched my first offer as a junior. So that just goes to show how hard the shit is. I'm just saying it from like a, you know, the landscape perspective. And now you got NIL and all those grad transfers. So, I mean, I got my first offers as a freshman. And so
who?
I think I got USF, Loyola, Maryland, and then they just started filtering in after that. I think it was my first two and they started filtering in. And so that just to show you how crazy this stuff is, when it came to blossoming, I really felt like my game got to the level where it needed to be to really play in college, which was figuring out that you can't be a score first combo guard at 6'2". Unless you're Kemba Walker.
Right.
I don't know how far that takes you. And so the transition into being a real point guard, obviously still having the ability to score, I still scored 2,300 points in high school, but the ability to make the right play, the ability to lead, communicate, and be a quarterback became my calling card. And so the work ethic aspect of that gives you the chance to do that, and I really just honed in on the little things. And so shout out to Coach Prince and everyone in AAU and everyone who helped me get there, especially as I got to Harvard, I learned even more extremely, if you don't do this, you will not see the light of day. There was a point at Harvard where I went from being the seventh man, I fought my way, I was in a top 10 recruiting class, so everyone was like ESPN 100 except for me, to fighting my way through training camp after reading a bunch of articles about he's not expected to play. I ended up being, me and Bryce Aiken came off. My first game, we're in Shanghai, playing Stanford, ESPN, national game. Me and Bryce checked in around 15 minutes. So like I had fought my way all the way into the rotation. I ended up playing a lot. Get hurt, miss about like six games, seven games. Didn't see the light of day for the next year and a half, midway through my sophomore year. And through that process was the craziest thing. I mean, you start reverting to the old ways, like, let me get to practice and go crazy and score it. Let me go. And it has nothing to do with that. It was like, how accountable can you be? Can you lead a group? Can you be the extension of the coach on the floor? Can you play defense?
Right.
And really be a factor on defense? And do all the little things. It had so little to do with scoring. And that was the craziest part coming off of, you know, being a 2,000 point scorer in high school.
Right.
And so what are you willing to do? How hard are you willing to work? And it took me spending an entire summer not doing an internship. I worked out all day, every day, 3-4 workouts a day. Me and Johnny were running around LA, Manhattan Beach, Linwood for the real run, Harvard Westlake to lift, like all day, every day. I got in the craziest shape. I came back and I was picking up full court when I started playing my sophomore year, full court, 40 minutes.
Dang.
And the only time Coach Amrick would take me out is, well, he didn't. He was asking me, like, you need one? And I had PTSD from not playing. So I'm like, no. I'm good. Full court every game for a whole season. And never broke down. And so, like, that level of figuring it out and work ethic is everything. And I think kids get so into all of the skill work and the bag, right, and you need it, but half of this stuff is the other. Like, the further you go up, it's about so many other things, you know. I've seen the most talented kids not be able to talk. You can't call it a screen.
Right.
You can't tell your guy that you're on the nail behind him. You can't huddle the team up when they go on a run and tell everybody down. I'm like, that becomes just as important as all this other stuff.
And especially so, when you're a guard, which is especially most when people. You're a guard.
And so those are the things that through that process you put in your tool bag and figure out. And so, yeah, it was nuts.
No, I love that. I love that. I wanted to highlight your college decision journey because you had some good basketball schools that you could have selected, right? But you chose Harvard. And why you chose Harvard and what that meant for not just your basketball career, where you had an awesome career at Harvard, but for the rest, set you up for the rest of your life.
So, right.
Yeah.
I mean, the first credit is to my parents. I mean, I've been very, very fortunate to be in a situation where I can look at life through a different lens and understand that basketball isn't the only thing. And so I'd be, you know, I'm lying to say that that's an all me decision. I luckily grew up with some really great parents. And so that's the first thing. The second thing was that it didn't have to be too much of a trade-off given where Harvard was at the time. I mean, they had broken in the top 25 multiple times in the last couple of years, a bunch of March Madness appearances and even runs. And then we had a top 10 class coming in.
Right.
That was, I think, right behind UCLA. And so it felt like the perfect storm in terms of getting the best of both worlds. Although you could have gone to a just basketball school and more importantly, getting a scholarship. That part of it all becomes an interesting matrix. But I think that decision just became, you know, the cliche, but real, you know, a 40-year decision versus a four. And I just didn't want to look back and be like, you know, sitting on this chair one day, man, we talking about how I could have went to Harvard.
Right.
What kids out of LA made that move?
Right.
And I wanted to kind of be that guy and do it. And I mean, it's paid dividends and the relationships there and the tenure on the team is something I cherish forever. So
no, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I just saw, I don't know if you just posted the clip, but there was a clip of you playing that you just posted a week ago.
Yeah,
what was that for?
Playing,
what was that?
We were playing, the team was playing Cornell, I think last weekend.
Yeah.
And I was looking for someone's birthday post recently. I came across that video. And so I was like, oh man, when Cornell plays in a couple of days, I gotta just throw this up. But that was that sophomore year run and everything is happening. Ivy League semifinal game. And I had just hit two threes and Chris Lewis did a Randy Moss and caught it and tossed it back to me at half court and just lined it up. And that's one of those moments where a summer like that and the way you stay down and find a breaking point. I remember I didn't play at Kentucky and that was the one that I had circled on my schedule all summer. And when I didn't play there, I remember calling my brother, man, I was just distraught. And he was like, that's always the point where the lowest point, if you can stay down and not give in. I've seen people send it in, you know?
Yeah.
And so to get through all of that, like that type of stuff happens on the other end of it.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's why I think till this day, those videos mean so much to me. And, you know, it's because you went through something to get it. It wasn't a cakewalk in any sense of the word. So
that's awesome. Yeah. I know we're jumping all over the place because I think there's key moments in your basketball life that defined you as a person and who you are today. And I really want to highlight those things because the work ethic, because of the passion for the game, because of the relentlessness. Your CIF title at Viewpoint. Oh, like you said, building up to it, trusting the process with this team that wasn't winning at all to winning a CIF title and the only one in school history, right?
Yeah.
For basketball at this point. What was that journey like and what was the commitment, not from just you, but your friends and your teammates at the time?
Yeah.
What was that like? What do kids have to do today to trust that process and develop to be a CIF title like team?
Yeah. It's, I wish I had the answers because we're living in a new world where tenures are shorter than ever, everywhere, college, high school. And I think the moment it doesn't suit you, you know, people kind of get up and go.
So I like my argument of that is if we look at Harvard Westlake, the back-to-back Open Division champions, and they've had only two transfers in those 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
You look at Roosevelt right now, ranked nationally.
Yeah.
Those kids have been together.
Yeah.
They're almost their whole life.
Yeah.
And so you see those
programs doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing it. Sure. And so even Bosco, the kids that are Bosco, they've pretty much been there
their whole career
as well. And they're playing well. So there's something to say about it, right? And that, like, you were doing it right during that time where transfers were happening, right?
Yeah,
those little things were building, but you guys did it. And I don't remember any conversation about you transferring or leaving. It wasn't, it was like, you're about to do it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, speak to that. So my goal is to, for the culture to hear it.
Yeah.
You don't have to jump ship. You just got to get better.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, we were all, I mean, we just loved it. We were so in it. And sometimes it's hard to remember how in it you really were. I mean, we had some of the hardest practices ever my first 2 years there. And Coach Prince really wanted to get the best out of us. Like, there wasn't any. We were going to be the best condition team if we weren't something else, you know? And so he maximized what we could get out of that group year over year. And I think we just had a group that really cared, not only about winning, but about each other. And so that core group just held each other accountable, which I think is another semi-lost art in different places right now. And so we had to have hard conversations. We had the fights. We had all of that. And so to be able to, again, stick it through, I think there's always rewards when you can get over those humps.
Yeah.
And we see it now, too. I mean, as you start to transition out of basketball and be on the business side of things, the most progress happens when you really sink your teeth into something. When you fiddle on the top of everything and it's very high level and it's very like, oh, you know, you sprinkle some over here, you sprinkle some over there, it's really hard to see like the real progress and unless you're really in the weeds or something. And so I implore with kids to try to stick things through.
Yeah.
And I also implore with the parents to let them stick things through and let them experience adversity. Because it only builds character, right? I think if you start routinely leaving when things don't work out for you, it can get dangerous.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
No, thanks for sharing that. I think that's important. The other part I want to highlight is what is the art of networking, right? Mm-hmm. You went to Harvard and the connections you made transcended to basketball and even beyond that and with your experience. So what would you say are the three keys to networking when you go to college or even when you're in high school or in these spaces where you have the opportunity to meet some people who can elevate you?
Yeah. The first thing is just be kind. it amazes me that people don't, you know, can't put on a smile and shake someone's hand and look them in the eye and say hello. That's half of it. Treating someone the right way goes the longest way. Yeah. I mean, and I'm sure you've had a situation like this too. People still come up to you to this day and you're like, oh, what up? And you fake don't, it's been a decade since they might have seen you, and I have no idea, quite frankly, who that person might be.
Happens every day I'm in the gym.
You know? But you treated them such a way in which that lasts forever.
Yeah.
And so, not to tell myself.
No, I think we all do it, but yeah.
But, I mean, that's the other thing. I always want to give flowers to the people who shape that perspective. You know, the Coach Amakers of the world and people who make you understand very quickly that this is a lot bigger than basketball and bring the right people around you to the program. We were fortunate to have conversations with, you know, the former CEO of Goldman Sachs one day, and the next week it's Cornell West, and incredible leaders of thought. And so from that perspective, we were so blessed from a networking standpoint and from a learning standpoint. But when it comes to actually networking yourself, I'd say be kind, be authentic. You know, being real is everything. I think you had a good friend of mine who's a peer and brother to me, Max Hazard, and I know you know him well, and just one of the most real and authentic people that you can meet. And I think it's just harder and harder to come by as you get older. So it shines through when you have conversations. And you know people aren't gassing things up and,
right.
You know, giving you the most. Like, authenticity goes the longest way. And I'd say the third thing would be listening. Everybody wants to get in the room and tell you everything about themselves. Like being just listening and hearing people's stories and, you know, their tales and what they've had to go through or what they've accomplished. I mean, you'd be amazed how they take a liking to you when you just listen and are a sponge. And I'd say those are the three simple things that I'd kind of throw at anybody in terms of networking and whatnot.
I think that's what we base our show off of. Like, listen, I never verbalize them, but like, that's what this space is about. Right. It's just like, being kind, like anybody could sit in this, most people could sit in this chair. Some people who aren't kind and I don't like aren't going to sit in this chair. but there's a space for most people in this chair. And like you said, listening, like I know all this stuff about you, but to hear you say it, right, it means so much more. There's so much value to your journey and what you've been through and where you've been and where you're going, because there's words to the story. And it's coming directly from you. Yeah. And so you need to probably get into the podcast space. I don't know if you know this, but I'm sure she's going to tell you after too. Like you're very good at this, and your knowledge and your life experience, like what people can draw from you, you have a wealth
of
wisdom, bro. Yeah, like
appreciate that.
Real talk. And so it's like to share that with people is your gift to the world. Like besides your energy when you come in and who you are, like this part of you, man, is an awesome part to share, because it's like you said, it's rare. It's rare when somebody is well-spoken, cool at the same time, hooper, businessman, like you're all these things, you know what I mean? Man, like I love to give people a little encouragement, like you can do this, man. Like I don't know, just start posting yourself talking about life, bro. It's like, share this with the world. Share this with the world. Not as dope, man. And your networking at Harvard opened up doors for you to play pro, correct?
Yeah.
Tell us the story.
In its own weird way, I mean, quite frankly, my entire life has been this like serendipitous series of events. My freshman summer, I got connected with a junior or senior at the time named Steven, and he had gone to Vietnam the summer before, and he had met Henry Nguyen, who's the owner of LAFC, the soccer team here in Los Angeles, and he's Vietnamese as well. Leading up to that point, growing up, I had an interesting childhood, because I was in the basketball community, which is obviously predominantly more black. And then at school, I was like not Asian enough to be Asian, but I also wasn't black enough to be black until I got like really good at basketball. Now I'm black.
Right, same.
And so I always had this interesting thing of, you know, it was never cool to be Vietnamese. It was never... it was something you kind of just tucked away. And so up until I got connected with him and I was able, he brought me back for an internship the following summer, where I got to spend the whole summer with him, shadow him, and play some hoops. I fell in love with it. And I was like, this is what I've been missing. I mean, they don't teach you this in the textbooks, that this is Vietnam. You know, you just get told that there's some rice fields and there was a war. Most beautiful landscapes ever, and just the best people. And I saw myself in the kids that I was kind of seeing. And so fell in love with it. He was joking with me at the time, like, hey, this is your recruiting trip. And I'm like, oh man, get out of here. He's like, watch, there's gonna be a day we mess around and bring you back. And kudos to Henry if he sees this. I mean, I like to call him a 5-year visionary. I mean, the things he talks about to you in the moment, you're always like, what? And he's always talking 5 years out, and it always happens. It's the craziest thing ever. Fast forward, COVID comes around, the world shuts down, and he gives me a call like, hey, what do you think about doing next? And by the way, we have the borders closed off.
What are you doing at this? This graduated?
We just graduated. We just got sent home.
Oh, gotcha. Oh,
so we're like doing classes online.
Your senior year was the last year or the first year of COVID?
Yeah. So this is March. This is right before March Madness. We get sent home senior year. So right in that, I'm probably about to graduate on Zoom or something at that point. And he gives me a call and he was like, what do you think about doing next? And so I end up moving across the world in the middle of COVID to luckily a country that had the borders closed and they were open inside. So it was like, great. I missed a lot of the pandemic stuff for like training here. And was the coolest experience of my life. I didn't know what to expect. I had seen it in 2018 when I had gone to the games. It was a different level of fandom, man. I mean, you can imagine, there's not that many Vietnamese basketball players. You got me and my brother and Jalen Williams. So when I went over there, I didn't know the weight that we held.
Like, they knew who you were.
I had to quarantine for 2 weeks in the hotel. By the time I came out, I saw people in the bushes shooting me with cameras. This is 2 hours out of the city. It's 2 hours out of the city. A 2 hour ride out of the city, and there was already press waiting for me. And I was like, oh, okay. And that became the precedent moving forward. It got even crazier when I ended up going back in 2022 for the national team. That was insane. But like, I didn't understand the impact that I was about to have. And I remember in 2018 wanting to go back at some point and have it. And so it was this full circle moment of seeing the kids at the games. And I mean, the fandom was insane. And so that's kind of how the whole Vietnam thing came together. But it started at a lunch meeting under the CAA building, right? Mm-hmm. And 4 years later, I'm moving there permanently to play, win a championship, signed with Nike out there, had a Gatorade billboard thing going, and then jump into a family office situation, which became my first venture capital kind of job with Henry and learning directly from him, who's, you know, global franchisee of McDonald's out there, and the LAFC owner. He has a bunch of things, but that was how it all kind of shook out.
You're like the Michael Jordan of Vietnam, or who would you compare?
I hate to even say that.
No, it's the truth,
but
though.
Out there, yeah.
That's wild.
That's at least how they received me. Yeah. So it was like the coolest thing. I mean, it was the coolest thing. It felt like, you know, you grow up playing 2K. Everybody goes playing 2K and doing the My Player thing. You get to choose your shoe deal, and right. You get to have a billboard and, you know, live that. So to be the talent quickly was like, you know, it was a fun experience. I don't know if I'd want to live like that forever. I understand the craziness now of being real talent. It's not a lifestyle that I think most people want it. I think everyone growing up on social media now like wants cameras and they want. No, I don't think you want that.
What are the cons? What part do you have to be aware of?
I just don't think it's the human experience to have to look over your shoulder. Or I've been in a boba shop on the side of the street and you see people sneaking, and it's just like, I think that aspect of it can either spook you or it can blow your head up. Both of which I don't think was meant at the core of like the human experience. I don't know. I think that's why people get crazy. I got out of it quick enough to where I was okay. But you can start to see, like, you know, I see why people get crazy.
How many years did you play over there?
I played a season. We won. That was my closure, so I was good. I was like, I'm going to retire like that. It's a perfect ending. Because I wanted to get into business. And so 2022 came around, and I ended up going back to play for the National League. Because every 20 years, they host basically the Olympics for Southeast Asia, called SEA Games. And it was kind of a couldn't-turn-down opportunity. I'll be 40 something next time that happens, so
right.
I don't know if my ankle's already bad. I don't know if I could take it that far. So went back and did that while I still could, and it was the most rewarding experience of my life. But
those games were in Indonesia, right?
No, they were in Vietnam.
Oh, really?
That's what I was saying. Yeah. That, so it was. Wow. It's like holding the Olympics in LA,
man.
And you're, say Russell Westbrook played or something like that. So to have that moment and see everybody, I mean, people were crying. It was really cool.
And you got to get signed by Nike, which is
that was
probably all of our like childhood dream to get signed by a shoe, get a shoe deal. And it's important that people know, like, you were a pro at the highest level in your own right, right. And you weren't in the NBA. Like, your experience was one for the books, it sounds like, right? And so I want kids to understand that. And I think the important part, you touched on something in the beginning of this story, is that, you know, you didn't know how to embrace that side of your ethnicity.
Yeah.
And when you did, look what happened. Like, speak to that for those who are biracial or, you know, for me, I was, my grandma's white, but mm-hmm. I'm the light-skinned dude in my family. Yeah. So I was called all types of names by my cousins because I was a light-skinned dude. Yeah. And I didn't know how to navigate that. I was never cool. Like you said, I was never cool enough. Like, I hung around the black people, I was a light-skinned dude. I hung around the white people, I was a black dude.
Right.
That space mentally for a kid can get confusing.
Yeah.
I think basketball closes that gap.
Right,
when you can hoop, people are just like, oh,
you can hoop.
It's a universal language, universal
absolutely.
Race.
Absolutely.
So, but speaking to that with some guidance or advice for somebody who is dealing with that.
Yeah. I'll even make it a bit more broadly, like, lean into what's unfamiliar or unknown, right? And a lot of that could be directly what you're talking about right now. I think on the other side of that is that, at minimum, a beautiful experience where you learn things about other people, and I think that just makes you a more whole human. I think these days with algorithms and kind of just news cycles and whatnot, it's so easy to get trapped in the bubble in which you're comfortable, in which you already know. We've blocked ourselves out successfully from understanding other people's backgrounds, perspectives. And so whether you're biracial, whether you're just on the other end of the coin from anybody, I implore anyone to just go see that and go feel that and go put yourself in someone else's shoes. For me personally, living somewhere else outside of the United States was probably one of the best experiences I could have ever had. Hmm. Growing up here, we think this is the center of the world.
We do.
And it's not. You're thinking everyone's tripping, like, I gotta get to the States. Nobody over there or in Asia in general cared about going or vacationing in the United States. Nobody is tripping. They're like, man, we're trying to go to Europe. Yeah. Or we're trying to go somewhere else. And so just having a global perspective on things is helpful. But yeah, lean into the other side of yourself that you maybe not have explored. I mean, there's beautiful things. I can't promise you a Nike deal, but there's going to be beautiful parts of yourself. I mean, I think constantly there's a lot of yourself that's always undiscovered, regardless of your age. And so if you can kind of just swim into those ponds and oceans that are, you know, unmarked, it's typically going to do you good in one way or another.
Wow. Poetic. Poetic. Did you note this? You got to note this part. I love this part. Okay.
As soon as he started
with
leaning into the unfamiliar.
Oh, yeah. It's like, yo, this is next level. Next level. I'm going to take a quick water break.
Yeah, but I mean, like you said, I just would have completely closed off a whole chapter of my life if I was too scared.
Yeah,
to go over there. If I was to, you know,
you did it during COVID, which is wild. Like,
which is wild. This is my unknown. Point. It would have been so easy to stay home,
right,
and be comfortable.
Yeah,
and this is where it's shout out to Henry. He had already got me comfortable with being there. Mm. He knew there was gonna be a day. If he asked me that without context, it's a different story, especially during COVID.
Yeah,
but I was there for a summer, and this is where he's just.
You retired fairly quickly from your pro career
and
then went back and played for the national team, which is awesome, that experience. You wanted to get started with business.
Yeah.
Why so encouraged to move into business quickly? And if you give me the 2-minute drill of from when you decided to step into venture capital and where you are today, give me the 2-minute drill of that.
Yeah. To answer your first question, the reasons why, there's two reasons why. One was great experience, making decent money, whatever. I wasn't making MBA money. Let's just keep it very real. And so I didn't want to look up 10 years from now and have to start in my 30s. That was just my take on it, right? I felt like, although there was a bunch of Harvard alums that told me, play as long as you can, this work thing isn't going anywhere, it's always easy. They're like semi-retired or uberly successful, and they're like, yeah, play as long as you can. And I'm like, you say that, but I just don't want to be starting with a late leg like that. So there's that aspect of it. The second aspect of it was, you know, quite frankly, if I was going to keep playing, I was going to have to start jumping horizontally around Asia. So the next gigs I had been offered was kind of like Japan, which is lit, you know, and other places. But from a meaning standpoint, I was just going to be another foreign player out there.
Yeah.
So for me to have to go do the Japan and then hopefully Taiwan, and then it was like, not to say just a basketball player in those other places, but it wasn't going to have the same impact. And so I was like, you know what? This ended on such a good note. Let me just leave it.
Yeah.
Let me leave it how it is. The 2-minute drill on venture capital to date would be, yeah, worked for Henry, got a lot of cool experience working on a bunch of different projects there, joint ventures and like buy now, pay later. You know, they don't have, half the country doesn't have a bank account out there, just to give you some, I mean, developing country. How can you score people on their credit, right? Cash transactions, whatnot. How can we use telecom data to score your social profile? And so did a joint venture with a company out in Indonesia at the time who had those algorithms in place. We had the infrastructure and the banking side of it. So that was the first gig. The second gig, I ended up, serendipitous series of events, Anita Oberse, professor at the Harvard Business School, connected me via FaceTime with Russell Wilson. And so impromptu, we're on FaceTime, me, him, Sierra. I ended up going to their house, kind of doing like a demo day, and I ended up shooting up to Seattle. This is back when he was on the Seahawks, and working for them pretty briefly. Great experience. Got to, like, again, work across a couple different really cool projects and ventures. Was the director of special projects over there, and reported to him directly, so that was fun. And then went back for the national team that took up the vast majority of the first half of 2022. And then I've been with Struck Capital now for the last 2 years. Just came up on 2 years, actually. And so we're actually a venture studio. And that's been fun because both experiences to date have been venture-oriented, but also on the build side in terms of strategy and ops. And so we actually build the startups from 0 to 1. And I'm not sure if you've built anything or booked anything on Resy to go out to a nice restaurant.
Okay.
CTO built Resy, sold it to Amex. Our chairman is Tom Ryan, who started Pluto TV. He's now the CEO of Paramount Plus. And so we got a really, really cool, unique group of entrepreneurs and venture capitalists that have kind of come together and productized the whole. For everybody out there, we're basically a startup that creates startups.
Thank you. I would say break this down in basketball terms.
Yeah, basketball terms.
Yes.
In basketball terms, we're a startup group of 12 people funded by external VCs and ourselves that essentially, instead of saying, I'm going to work on one startup for the next 10 years, we are a machine that creates startups very objectively. So we kill most of them and they don't make it out. But the ones that do were very, very thought through. We go hire, let's say we built a basketball company. You would be a CEO candidate, right? And we go hire them and we split the equity and then we go do venture capital funding from there. So that's kind of the model. Hopefully that
was way easier to understand.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
sure. Yeah. I understood what you were saying before, yeah. But for the audience and, you know, like keeping it simple, because if you can explain what your purpose is and what you do, what would it be?
I enjoy the operation side a bit more than I do the deal side. And so the simple answer to that is I think I'm an entrepreneur at heart. Fortunate enough to see my dad do that successfully. It's a very risky, risky thing. But building things is my passion, I think. And the storytelling around it is even more exciting. And so whether that's bouncing ideas off the wall with Max around Brandstein or whatever it is, I mean, storytelling is something that I live for. And something I actually wanted to to note now that I said it out loud was I keep bringing Max in, and Max is one of my best friends. Playing at a mid-major school, you learn how to storytell for yourself in a way that other people didn't have to. Mm. We didn't have a content team. We didn't have mixed. You go to a high school game these days, these kids got 12 cameras under the basket.
That's what literally she does. She is hired by high school kids
to do
to
it
to build their content.
I wish you couldn't find a camera when we were in high school. Yeah. Let me tell you what it used to be. It used to be, if you had a Max Preps photo with the Max Preps watermark on it,
that means
you're up.
Yes, all the way.
You would go through those pictures after the game, and if you had anything, you could be in the Jason Lee in the photo. You're posting it. It was the equivalent today of you getting to college maybe or the pros after you see a Getty Images photo.
Yeah.
And you're low-key keeping the Getty on there because we thought it was hard in college. You're right. Like, oh, man, I got a Getty? That was Max Preps. And there was definitely no video. Unless you had a Baller's Life, you had a Yay Area's Finest, you were one of those ones.
Yeah.
But it did, like, so when we got to college, this is the entrepreneurial part of storytelling, which is you're either not going to get content or you got to figure it out. And I remember this is kind of how me and Max connected back in the day. Me and him both cared about letting people back home know what this was.
Yeah, I didn't know you did your own content.
Oh my God. And this is shout out to Sam Maronko. I met this kid, Sam Maronko, in Boston during my time at Harvard, maybe my sophomore year when I started playing. And Sam will tell you, he was DMing me pictures. They're okay. Sam knows this. They were okay. And he was hungry. I was hungry. We were like, man, let's just keep doing this. And he's so good now. I mean, he shoots for Jason Tatum. He shoots for Jaylen Brown. He shoots for the Celtics. He shoots for Slam. And if you go watch his mixtapes now, if you go look at his pictures now, I mean, he's up there with the ones. He's up there with the Cool Max. He's up there with the Gradient Visuals. Like, his stuff looks so amazing. And so by the time we got to senior year, I mean, those are some of my favorite things on my Instagram, or those mixtapes that we put together and recapping things and sitting there in a dorm. I'm sitting there in the dorm room with him putting a Rick Ross song. I'm like, no, we got to do this song. We got to cut this. I want this lyric. And so all of that, I mean, then you go to Vietnam. I could have easily gone to Vietnam and it would have been documented, but not in the way I wanted it to. And so there's these guys who reached out to do a documentary and I could have just hands off. I'm going to go hoop. Meet me in the hotel after the thing. I'm getting the treatment. I'm telling them, we got to put this mixtape out with this song because I'm trying to have this person hear certain lyrics. You know how.
Yep.
And so that whole process of owning that is real. I remember me and Max, we used to go on, we scraping things off Twitter, trying to see, you know, maybe you got a post and just, I mean, it was scavenging for and being resourceful around what you can do. And so you got to do that 0 to 1 and no matter what you're doing. It's not enterprise. It's not resources of the world. It's like you got to go scrap these things together. And so that's one of my favorite things about that whole process was the media side. People are like, man, you guys had it. I'm like, no. I had a tunnel video. I told the guy to meet me in the tunnel. We didn't have a tunnel. And I don't think I've ever said it on camera. We didn't have a tunnel.
Where'd you get the tunnel from?
We made the tunnel. Like, there was a really cool tunnel. It has some of the Harvard greats on there. It has Jeremy Lin and some of the other guys. And it has a really cool mural of, like, past and present players. We don't even walk through that side of the gym. We walk through the other side because certain swipes, and it just doesn't make sense to go all the way around. I told the camera, I said, hold on. I'm walking in. You know, it's Boston, so it's like 0 degrees in the middle of February. Told him, meet me on the other side, get there early. I'm coming with a fit on. I almost froze my hands off with a fit and I remember the coaches were laughing at me. The players were laughing at me like, here go Christian. Here's Juicy doing the most.
Representing Cali. Thank you.
Here goes the LA guy. And those pictures came out at the time. I think I had three other teammates trying to get in the next week.
Trying to go through the tunnel.
Now everybody coming to the game with a fit on. And so that's just, yeah, maybe that's the LA. Maybe
that's dope.
But we're gonna brand it. Too far out here to not brand.
I love it.
So
I love it, man. Man, thank you. Thank you, man. I know there's so much more on your journey. The key takeaways just from you and your story, man, are the inspiration of, man, just going to get it and working hard and taking chances and believing in yourself, man. You have the people talk about this is the confidence. Like, you have this confidence that is at the right level. It's not conceited. It's not, you know.
Thank you.
You just have this, like, you know who you are and you know what you're going after, and you make decisions quick. And that's the definition of a leader. It's like being able to make those decisions and having confidence to make those decisions. So that's inspiring to me, like where I'm at in my life. You know, I'm old, I'm an unk now. So in this unk phase, even though, like, having that confidence, man, when you're so responsible for so many things, it matters. But man, you on it. And so, man, that's encouraging, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
No, for sure. And we're going to hop to the next segment of your show. Thank you again for sharing your journey.
Yeah.
My Rushmore. All right, so like you said, the LA swag, the fits, right? We're going to talk about basketball specific, man. Your Rushmore, your all-time four basketball swag.
That's a great question. That's a great question because it's changing. And it's always changing. And it felt like when we were coming up, I'm starting to see different deltas and changes in what these kids are wearing. I went to a high school game the other day. We went to, I think it was Brentwood versus somebody. Might have been Viewpoint Brentwood. Was it Viewpoint Brentwood or Brentwood kid? I don't know. Anyway, there wasn't one kid on the floor but tights. And back in the day, you had to have the tights. You almost felt naked without the tights. If I could have the three quarters specifically, maybe with a logo on it, you got a UIBL, you got a UAA, you're tough. And there wasn't one kid with tights. It was throwing me off.
Yeah.
And so I if we're doing a Mount Rushmore, I'm throwing the tights on there.
All right, got the tights.
Headbands are out of style now, but that used to be a thing. I wasn't always a big headband guy because my hair just didn't work out, but like the Tim Howells of the world on my team.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a headband since like.
That's interesting.
In a long
time. They used to have the Ninja Turtle ones.
I used to do the Ninja ones in college. I think headpieces, I put that on the Mount Rushmore. The third would be something that's come into play now, more so than it was during my time. Those like long scrunchy socks.
Right.
The NBA guys are wearing.
Scrunchy socks, yep.
Scrunchy socks.
Yeah. No, because that was during my high school days they had those.
So that's a revamp.
For sure.
Interesting.
Oh, for sure, yes.
Okay.
The scrunchies, that's why I know the name.
Everything's a cycle. I don't know why I was ignorant enough to think.
Welcome to the Uncle Todd show.
No. That's right. That's right. Okay, so that's it. Was anything else back in your time? I mean, you guys were probably a bit more baggy.
Besides the baggy shorts.
Okay. I found some weird high school photos the other day that were getting sent around. It was hilarious. We had like really baggy shorts because it wasn't cool yet to do the short shorts.
Yeah.
We had the baggy shorts with a tight top. I wouldn't put this on my Mount Rushmore because we looked terrible. Thought we looked hard. But the tight was taut, and then the shorts were kind of baggy. It was like down to here.
That's hilarious.
The next couple years, it got higher and higher. And then I would put as my number four, and the reason I do this is because I wore them, but specifically this Cal Supreme team that had Parker Cartwright and them on it. I think it was like the 17U at the time. They had the whole UIBL team had these highlighter yellow Hyperdunks. And I miss Hyperdunks. Hyperdunks were a hell of a shoe.
They were.
They were comfortable and they were just hard.
They were.
They were hard. And I'm going to just throw those highlighter yellow Hyperdunks, top joints. Everybody was, it looked crazy.
Crazy.
So I got to put that on there too.
I love it. I love it. My four, I'm going to have to go with a headband just because it's a classic piece. Yeah. Like the headband just for basketball. I used to rock one And I used to rock it like right here for some reason. I wouldn't put it on my forehead. Yeah, you put it like halfway on your head. There's a lot of people who did that. You don't have to look like that, Karina. It's before your time, youngin. So the headband. And then we had, I don't know if you remember this period, we used to wear the wife beaters, and then we'll wear t-shirts with the sleeves cut off, but the shirt would be ripped down the side.
Okay.
This was swag. This is like AI stuff. AI
yeah, but time. The cutoff was like out here. It was further on the shoulder, right?
We wore big shirts. It was the big shirt phase. It was our, you know, Air Force Ones and Nelly time. So we had the big clothes, and then so the wife beater with the cut open shirt, that was my swag. I wish that never went away. A matter of fact, I might wear it tomorrow.
You need to. Send me a picture if you do that. I didn't see that.
Those two, and then the other one is Sunset Park, my favorite movie, one of my favorite basketball movies. We used to do one sleeve cut off and the other one there. Yeah, wild. I know.
That's terrible.
It was swag. We all did it, though.
I can't co-sign that. I can't co-sign that.
And one made a shirt with, like, that was the shirt they made with the
sleeve. They made a one sleeve?
One, dog, go look it up. They had the one sleeve because I think either Headache or one of them and one dudes that had the one sleeve. It was on your shooting arm so you can get it off. You
know, it was a short sleeve or it was a cutoff?
This was a short sleeve and this was a cutoff. So you never seen Sunset Park?
No.
Okay.
I don't want to see it.
No.
That's what they were.
You got, first off, it's an amazing hoop movie that you will appreciate because the basketball part, but they're also the cutoff and the sleeve. Okay. And this is why I need help.
I still can't get behind the two. I can't get behind the, I mean, I guess it's AD's look, but the players, especially the guards who got the two, like the tight compression,
you don't like compression
short sleeve.
You don't like the compression? I wear that now.
You do?
I wear the compression shorts.
But that might be more utility for you.
No, it is. No, it holds me together.
Yeah.
Dad bod.
So I can do that. But like if you're 17 wearing the tight compression short sleeve, I just don't think that's, right now, I don't think that's great. It could vintage
really?
In time. It could vintage. I'm not the source of truth here, but.
What do you wear under your jersey then?
I'm kind of going closer to you right now. Right now, if I get out there once a week, I'm throwing on the bigger cutoff sleeve.
Okay.
Under the jersey.
Yeah, man, you're old now. You're turning into an unk.
I'm turning to unk.
That's unk. I'm
turning to unk.
Yeah, man, the tight joint is comfortable. Yeah, it's very nice. It's soft.
It is.
Yeah.
That was like a sleeve. I'm throwing a sleeve on there.
You do have a sleeve. I remember that. Yeah, you do have a sleeve. And then my last, you went shoes, so it made me think of the pro models, man. That was us back in the day, the Adidas pro models.
Was that the one with the,
it was kind of chunky, right? They're shiny. Yeah, they're super shiny.
Yeah, I think I know you're talking about. Yeah.
So those were the hyper dunks of our time where everybody had pro models. This one, the pumps were Adidas.
Uh-huh.
Adidas was everything pretty much. So pro models, you had them every color. LeBron had them in the St. Vincent, St. Mary's colors. Like, they were tough. And so.
That is hard.
Toughest Adidas shoes, I don't care, but for basketball.
Was that where you could interchange the colors on the...
I think they remade them and you can do that.
That wasn't...
No, that wasn't cool. But, no, nah, but they were the shiny joints, but...
Okay.
Hey, man, I'm going to get you a sleeve and a cutoff just so you can rock it when you do pickup. Just to see how you feel. Okay. Just to see how you feel.
And I'll try it out.
I'll do scrunchy socks, so we even. So
yeah, good.
We do. All right. For sure, man. Our next segment is Fix the Net. So, cool. Misconception about Christian Duzang that you want to make straight.
And I'm fixing
say
the
it
net?
First, then after and then you I'm, tell the truth, then you fix the net.
The truth is, this is so funny for people who follow me on Instagram. I don't hoop anymore. I don't hoop anymore.
At all?
I mean, once a week.
Okay,
I still take care of my body. I mean, I had treatment this morning. I was on the table, but like... I'm not hooping anymore. Like, I think because it's so much harder to storytell, I think, around venture capital stuff, it's a lot more dry, that a lot of the highlighted things on my page are still, like, hoop stuff. And so constantly I get the, you going back? Or, what's next? Or, you know, are you still playing? And so, no, I'm on the business side of things now, and... if I do post anything hoops wise, it's therapeutic content.
Yeah.
I posted like me and Max shooting the other night, like late at night on a Saturday night in the gym. And people were like, you getting ready to go back? I'm like, no. I get too many of those. So like, for the record, I am retired for sure this time. And that'd be my fix.
Can I get you for an adult league?
Oh, I'll pull up.
Okay.
I'll get right in the adult
league. Talk about that.
Yeah, I'll get right in. Yeah.
All
right. Okay.
With the left. And so, yeah. Man, so you do recovery. Like you said, you're on the table still. What's
Man, I'm on the table still. I mean, so many years of injuries and whatnot that have like lingered. And so you gotta unlearn it, essentially. I mean, the way I was compromising and running and doing all this stuff, when you have a lot of input on your body like that, and then you don't have any input anymore, you start playing once a week at Windward, those things really start to pop up, and the hip problems and the knees and the ankles. And so I go to this place, I mean, shout out to Myo Detox, shout out to Vin and Shane and everybody over there. They work with a lot of really professional athletes and then just day-to-day people as well. But they have done such a good job of like starting with a very holistic approach, understanding why I move the way I move. They're fixing my foot. Like we're doing wedge exercises. It's hands-on myofascial work. And so, I mean, this stuff is next level.
Where is it?
They're opening one in New York, they're in Canada, and then in LA, it's West Hollywood, Brentwood, and Studio City.
I said, come to the Valley, yeah, okay.
Yeah, Studio City, and so they're great, man.
Like, that sounds like something I need with me pushing unk status really hard. Yeah. And still trying to
all
hoop.
The unk, if you got unk coming up, you need to go touch it. Just so that way you can stay mobile forever. It's kind of like future-proofing your body and getting ahead of certain things. So I'm trying to stay in the adult league for a minute.
Yeah, me too. I'm trying to dunk when I'm 50, so
you gotta go touch it.
All right.
Yeah, you gotta go touch it. But anyway, yeah, no, shout out to Myo, man. They've saved my life and given me a second wind in terms of being active and stuff. So.
And this is where we flip the script, man. Two questions for me, could be about anything in the world.
So when we started, where was your head at? I mean, you've built out so much from then to now, right? Infrastructure, school, like, where, you know, when you're going 0 to 1, it's hard to even see 1 to 10.
For sure.
And so I would love to get your thoughts on what you were thinking through at the time, right? And I think so many people, in retrospect, it's easy to be like, yeah, I was going to build the basketball company, you know, and I was going to be, you know, core prep and all these things. And so like, would love to know where your head was at in the moment, because a lot of times the vision could be somewhere more near term or whatnot. And so, yeah, would love to know back when we started in the very beginning of things, like where was your head at then versus, you know, after that and as you started to see you above horizons.
Man, I was literally building a program for Johnny. Like, I tell this story all the time. Like, how did this start? Johnny's dad asked me to start this. Like, your dad, like, I thank him every time I see him, and he birthed something like that's this big old business. Like, every time I see your dad, I'm like, thank you. And, you know, your dad's very, very humble and great. Yeah. He's like, oh, no, whatever, Todd. Like, thank you. Like, of course. But I was just trying to create something. He's like, hey, Johnny wants to train during the day. That's all I was doing. I was creating something so Johnny could train during the day.
Yeah.
Cool. There was a person with a need. I'm going to fulfill that need.
Right.
And that's kind of who I've become just in life, that little piece. But from the perspective of CORE, I started off as CORE Hoops Preparatory Academy. And this, you know, it was like, oh, this is cool. I'm going to have this little homeschool program with a few kids. And then there was 18. And then there was 28. And then there was 36. Then there was 72. And then once it got to that level, I was like, okay, this isn't a hobby anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it was great money because I'm training during the day, created this program, you know, having Johnny, Taryn, Clark, like all these kids who were good basketball players in it, made it have a reputable name, and we were doing the right stuff on the court. You know, I was just training. I'm like, oh, I'm just be a trainer and make money off of training.
Yeah.
That was the plan. That was the goal, is just keep make money off of training. And then once we hit that, once we hit 72 kids and I had basketball, football, and baseball rolling, I was like, oh, this is
crazy.
I got to figure out how to run a business.
Yeah.
And so, man, I was literally, when I tell you I did everything for this business, I built the website. I was my accounting. I did my own taxes. Like, I did everything, and only from learning from Google. There was like, I was in grime. I had no kids. I was just married. Like, I was good. I just was going. And that was it. It was, that's what it was until it wasn't. until it was like, oh man, I think I need to like create a business entity, and because my taxes are crazy right now, and I got to be a way to communicate with these parents different, and so that once it turned into a business, it's like, okay, what are you building, Todd? And that's when a vision that was given to me even before I started CORE, I went back to a journal, and it was from a 21-day fast I had, and God already had given me literally everything CORE was. I wrote down 2 years before CORE started, but didn't realize it till years later that that's what it was. And so I had to go back to that and look at the blueprint that God gave me. It was like, this is what it is. And so then CORE really took off. We actually, I shrank it back down because I was like, let me get a hold of this and figure stuff out. I wanted to be an agent at the time. Like I tried to, I became an agent. I was an NBA agent for 8 months. Nobody really knows that. And then I wasn't because CORE started growing, had this tremendous growth. And then it grew to what it is now. It's like, I'm literally still figuring out ways. We just took a new pivot and we're like doing like a franchise licensing model for CORE because what the structure, infrastructure that we've built works for schools and for athletes and to pull kids in and to develop them and to invest into them. And so it's just a, it's a mission, man. Like if a kid has a need, I'm going to fill it. That's that's literally what it is. Whatever a kid needs, I'm gonna figure it out for you. Because I didn't have that. My parents didn't know. I didn't have any real guidance, or we didn't listen to the guidance we had. We didn't understand what was in front of me when I was a kid. So I'm like, hey, the last thing you're going to have, or the, if it's anything else, you're going to have the information to make the right choice.
Right.
And so.
That's beautiful. I mean, there's so much crossover in what you just said throughout this whole conversation in terms of, I mean, that's the definition of entrepreneur. You know, and I love, what I love about you and what I want to give you your flowers is not only did it start with you're trying to help kids out and provide value, help them get better, is that through that process, obviously, picking up the business, hopefully anyone watching and the kids watching understand that you, there's no other way except throw yourself in the fire. So the longer you teeter in and out of, oh, I don't know how to do this, and I don't know how to do that, you're never going to know until you just drink out of a fire hose, which he so eloquently explained here. And like, the thing I want to give you your flowers for, though, is through that process, the reason that I've seen so many familiar faces come back on here and the reason that so many people always have good things to say about you is because you do things with such a genuine spirit and you genuinely care about people. And your interactions with all of us since we were kids is just as much about mentorship and life as it is about spin moves and fadeaways forever. And I think those lessons will live on forever. That was, those relationships live on forever. And I think that's where you get your flowers and that's where you have had real impact, is you've been a figure for people in their lives. And you know, left lasting impact. I couldn't tell you what dribbling drills we did. It definitely helped me, for sure. And we definitely got it tight. And that helped me get to the next step of where I was going. But the things I remember are the phone calls. The things I remember are those long conversations we had. And I think, just want to get you your flowers for that. I mean, now you're scaling it and doing this with so many other kids. I mean, I just remember we were in the corner.
Corner
360,
no, I appreciate
man.
For real.
Yeah, just so cool to see your growth. It makes it that much more rewarding for everyone else who's seen it at the ground level. Yeah. To see you go and do this thing.
No, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate, like, not just you and, like, your family, man. Like, just you guys, I group you guys together because it wasn't just like, oh, you know, your dad telling me this and then Johnny being the kid who start the program, but you being there as a support and, you know, trusting me with that as well and just all that, man. You guys have been literally, like, the backbone of starting CORE. Like, people don't truly get that. Like, it all it takes is one person to believe in you. And for one person to trust you. And your whole life can change. My whole, I just had got fired. I was a financial advisor. I just had got fired. Like, people don't know that. Like, I was scraping for something to just getting married. And your dad opened that opportunity. Like, it's dope. It was dope, man. It changed my life. It is literally a quarter of my life has been committed to this program that is, you know, impacted over 500 plus kids. 500, almost 500, or over 500 kids, which is is still crazy. So
it's incredible.
And Steph and people I'm able to do that with now. Like what your dad did for me is what I do for everybody. Yeah. Like, hey, what do you want to do with your life? Let's get, I was just doing it this morning. Yeah. Like a guy who's like, man, I'm in between this and this. Like, well, what's your calling? Like, that's what I'm big on is like, people focus too much on money.
Yeah.
Money will come if you fall into what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Right? You making a decision like, I'm not going to do basketball. I'm going to jump in to this business side of stuff. And I'm sure the provision is following because you're in your space. You're doing what you do best, right? With everything. Yeah. And you're having, I can tell you're having fun.
Yeah.
Like you're running off of 4 hours of sleep. We talked about you're running off of 4 hours of sleep, but you can't tell because you're doing what you love. Yeah. It is what it is. You lose sleep. Like I lose sleep because of my kids. I love them.
Yeah.
I lose sleep for whatever my passion is and all that things. So those things. So that encouragement to take that leap, take that jump, and then do what your passion, what God has called you to do. You have a simple purpose in this life, whatever that is, where you're impacting other people to show them the light.
Yeah.
That's what you're called to do. Go do that. And the provision will follow. The money will be more than what you ever can dream of.
For sure.
You're not pulling from a limited bank account. You're pulling from heaven when you're doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
So,
The second thing would be get these youngins some relationship advice. I know a lot of our conversations have been, you know, you've been one of the, you know, you're one of the good guys. And so the second thing would be just extracting a gem for you from you for whoever's listening. And any advice you got? Any advice?
Yes. It's very simple for me when it comes to relationships. One, you got to know God. You have to have a relationship with God, man. That's the center. That is the key. That is how you know yourself. We're made in God's image. And so know your value and your worth. I think most people, when they struggle in relationships, they don't know their value and their worth. And so they project, they have insecurities, they have all these other things that make a relationship difficult because they don't know their value. And so when you know you're made in God's image and the standard that God holds you to, and you embrace that, you'll know your value and you can reflect that back on somebody. Two is understand where you come from. It doesn't determine where you're going, but it does determine your behaviors, right? Growing up a certain way, like you growing up the way you did and how your parents treated you, make you view life from a lens where mine can be totally different,
right?
Where, you know, my dad was at work all day. My mom was at home hustling, doing, you know, babysitting, doing hair. She wasn't selling drugs, but almost had the trifecta, but doing everything to make sure we were there. So for me, like, it's crazy now with my kids and seeing it, and I'm giving this as an example, is like, we had to entertain ourselves. My dad was always working. My mom was always hustling.
Yeah.
Like busy. She watched us and she raised us for sure. Like there's discipline and structure, but as far as like one-on-one interaction, it's very hard to get, you know? And so with my kids now, man, they want all my attention and I love giving it to them, but it's very foreign to me. I'm like, you guys go play with one another. Like y'all are siblings. Uh-huh. Go play, go figure it out. Like go play by yourself. Like that's how I was raised. And so for me to know that my daughter, her love language is quality time. She just wants to sit with you. Mm-hmm. That's how she receives love.
Yeah.
It's foreign to me, but I have to accept that about her and create that balance. Yeah. Like, man, I got to give her this attention, but I also got to protect my emotions of how I want to give love and receive love. And so knowing yourself based on how you were raised and how your partner is very, very important. That's how me and my wife get along. It's like, I know she was almost, her sister's 11 years older than her. Uh-huh. And so she was almost like our only child. Mm-hmm. And so her life is based around that. It's not how I want to say it is singularly focused. Where me, I have a bunch of siblings. So everything was based around what everybody needs, not what just you want.
Right.
But that's what makes us get along because we understand each other now and we get on a common plane. And lastly, man, just don't take it too serious. Mm-hmm. Like, I think people get into these relationships and are looking for a parent and not a spouse to fulfill something in their childhood. And that's what God's for, is to do that. Your spouse or significant other is supposed to be your partner, like to walk with and to laugh with and to share this world with, regardless of if you're broke, if you're going through trauma, if you're going through anything. This person is supposed to walk with you through that and accept that person walking with you and have fun.
Right.
Like, who cares if your socks are on the floor?
Right.
Who cares if they didn't wash the dishes? Like, man, that's dumb to fight over stupid little stuff.
Yeah.
That's projection of something that's an insecurity in your life.
Yeah.
Like, what's really wrong for you to be tripping over this little stuff?
Right.
So don't trip over little stuff, man. Have fun. Like, me and my wife still have fun. Like, we talk mess to each other in front of the kids in Pig Latin. Do you know what Pig Latin is? Pig Latin is a fake language, right? It's where you take...
Do you switch the...
Ixnay on the Ixnay,
stuff,
right? Okay. So me and my wife, in front of my kids, we talk mess to each other in Pig Latin.
Because
the kids ain't here. But we having fun. We say some crazy stuff. And so we just keep it fun or we keep it light because, man, life's already hard.
Yeah, it's already
hard. The person you're supposed to spend the rest of your life with, man, is supposed to make it easier. You're supposed to have peace at home.
Yeah.
And so those are my three things
Those are gems.
Yeah, man. I do weddings, you know what I'm saying? If you need your wedding officiated, hit me up.
I was about to say, came in here preaching. You might have to get you one.
Yeah.
That might be the next one.
No.
Core weddings.
I've officiated 9 weddings.
Oh, you're dead ass.
Oh, I'm for reals. Oh, yeah, yeah. Let me know. I've officiated 9 weddings, 4 of which are basketball people, like in the basketball world.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. This is what I do, man. I believe in strong marriages. I believe in...
You're tough.
Strong families start with strong marriages, man. Okay. I'm a big believer in it. And that's how we heal our community.
Okay.
So, yeah, man.
Beautiful, man.
Man, thank you again, man, for coming on the show. You have your 24-second shot clock. That's your camera. Let the people know where they can find you and any message that you have for them today.
Oh, man. I mean, appreciate you having me, first and foremost. It was fun being on here. You can find me at, I'm most active on Instagram, so my last name, at Juzang. Message would be... Man, just be yourself. I know that sounds so cliche, but it'll take you places that you don't think it will. You'll find yourself in the places you're supposed to be in, and not places that you know aren't inauthentically aligned with who you are. I think you'll find peace in that. And what I also mean with be real is don't be afraid to take up space. Don't be afraid to stand your ground, like. It's always easier to let kind of, you know, things go or things slide or people kind of push you around a bit just so you could fit in or not cause a problem. But the older you get, the lesson I want to kind of give back is it's okay to take up space.
Yeah.
It's okay to draw the line in the sand. It's okay to like, hey, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
And it makes a lot of people uncomfortable. I'm way past the shot clock.
I'm way past
the shot clock. But that being said... It's okay to do that. And the older I get, the more I realize, you know, the younger us, we're like, you know, you just kind of, oh, whatever. And you start to, you kind of got to start to draw a certain line. So the same way on the court, it's like someone holding you, you got to swipe their hand off.
Yep.
You know, you got to be like, you know. So anyway, that's my shot clock, man. Be you.
I appreciate it.
Be you, and I think it'll always work out in the long term.
I forgot to ask you something.
Yeah.
So really quick question, man. Yeah. Shout out to Johnny, man. We love you, dog. Keep doing your thing.
So okay.
When did you know he was an NBA player? Growing up with him, being around him this
NBA, I mean, NBA's hard. The NBA thing comes into factor so much around situation. So the NBA situation is more like, oh, wow, you're killing it at UCLA. That's like the NBA situation. When I knew he was going to be great is a different story.
There we go.
When I knew he was going to be successful is a different story. And I always point back to the year that Core started, when it was him and T. Frank. And before that, you know, sixth grade Johnny or whatever, you get to drag him to the gym. And that was the year that he fell in love with the process, right? Like, he wanted to do another year and just work out all day. Johnny? Johnny wants to do that? And he became a lab rat. And that stands till this day. Like, those habits that I saw from that summer and then school year onward lasted. And so seeing that is when I knew he'll be fine. Yeah. Because most people don't want to do that, man.
Right, that worked.
And so that's when I knew he was going to be great. Wherever he landed, I mean, the NBA is so situational, and that he can score it.
Yeah.
He's going to be somewhere.
Yeah.
But more importantly, as a brother and as someone who just cares about him so much, it was I'm always most proud about that eighth grade year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's dope.
Yeah.
So no. Thank you for sharing.
And then he came back after Kentucky that summer and busted my ass.
Kentucky was his wake up call. The Kentucky for you on your schedule and then Kentucky experience for him.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Came back. We played once. I was like, okay.
that's it.
It's different. Yeah. I'm not getting them no more after this one. So anyway. Yeah.
No, that's dope, man.
Yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Appreciate you coming on the show, man. Are you coming back, I think, man. You amazing. Amazing, man. Appreciate thank you. Man. Thank you for being open and sharing everything you have, man. So appreciate you.
Appreciate it.
Karina, any questions?
We have one. Yeah. So since you were in media and creative when you were doing it, because you were directing and all that, what's your creative outlet now since you work so much in business?
Yeah. I need one is the answer. Like, I'm trying to figure out how that shapes in the next world. And that's something that I'm constantly thinking about and trying to figure out. The answer isn't quite there yet. And so in the meantime, it's always been clearly basketball and then helping other people with their things. So like when we shot, instead of going out the one recent Saturday, we were like, man, let's have that itch. Like, let's go get in the gym. And everybody wants to shoot now. Everybody wants to document things. And so it's easy. We get a rebounder, get a camera in there. It's like, we're going to shoot either way. So let's just get some shot footage there. On the other side of that, my other outlet is just helping people with their thing. So love working with Brand Scene and just being a soundboard there, whether it's on the biz side or on the just kicking around designs or whatever. That, and then along with a bunch of other brands, like being that soundboard and just being able to think through storytelling in that sense is enough of an outlet for me in the meantime. If I have to bring that back to myself later one day on the work side, like, that'd be great, but I get just as much fulfillment, if not more, thinking through that stuff with other people. So, yeah.
All right, y'all. That's all we have for today. We'll see y'all next time. Peace.